Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. Thursday. How did we end up missing last Thursday, Ramsey?
I don't know, Rocky. Just you get busy, and I mean, you get just chaotic busy. I can't even remember what I did last Thursday. It's been so hectic. Cause understand, you know, you think my travel schedule looks busy. It really starts rocking on when I get here at the house, and I'm at the computer all day every day and answering the phone all day every day. So I really don't remember how we got off last Thursday, Rocky.
Oh man, look, I've been running through the woods with one of your best friends the past 2 days.
Who?
Criswell.
Oh yeah, Criswell is the maddest person I know at a turkey, and that I personally know. I think Criswell is mad at turkeys. Second only maybe to Forrest. Forrest hates a turkey, and I don't know why, but he hates them. And he ain't killed one this year, but not for trying. He's hunting at them hard, but he hadn't connected yet.
Look, Criswell and I both woke up yesterday morning, about 4:45, and I looked over at him. He said, "Oh man, I got a freaking headache," and we had maybe one whiskey drink Tuesday night. He said, "I know I didn't drink that much." I said, "Man, I'm telling you, it was from laughing." Holy crap, man! We had a ball chasing turkeys. We had a ball. I just sat back and listened. I didn't talk a lot. I just sat back and listened to them tell stories about hunting public land in Arkansas, Spence and Brooks Tinsley, and it was a great time to hang out with them. But Criswell is mad at turkeys.
Oh, he is.
He and I were teamed up together to go after them, and. The turkeys, for some reason, there's a lot of turkeys on this place, and they were pretty quiet, except the last day that we were there, that first day, they didn't say a word. We saw a ton, but they were quiet. They weren't gobbling much. Mm-hmm. The second day, they started gobbling, and set Criswell up where I thought for sure it was a done deal. And I said, "Listen, I'm just going to go to the other end of this place," which... probably, you know, they were on fly down right on top of Criswell. I was going in a backup spot. Well, it turns out the turkeys were at the backup spot, and it was a flock of them.
Oh, so did you get one?
Did not. We chased turkeys and pulled at tail feathers, and I'll tell you what we did learn the past couple of days. The place that I hunt, that it's me and one other guy that hunts this probably 6,000 acres. And I found out over the past 2 days that when people think that the mice are away, or when the cat's away, the mice will play. Crap, it was freaking trespassers. I don't know how many trespassers we kicked off the place. Yeah, I'll tell you this, turkey hunting is the ultimate sport that drives hunters mad to do some crazy things. They know,
well,
no boundaries when it comes to turkey hunting.
I can't disagree with you there. You know, I'm glad I'm not afflicted with it like y'all, like Forrest. Forrest has been pulling his hairs out. He's been dug in hard on turkey or turkeys plural, and boy, I mean, he's had some close calls, it sounds like, but he hadn't closed the deal yet. He's a public land turkey hunter, which to me puts him in a whole another category of turkey hunter. I just that in and of itself puts it in a whole another category. I mean it's just you know, we all read the internet. It's public land duck hunting is one thing, but public land turkey hunting is something entirely different, I think. You know, and I've always thought that the best turkey hunters and the best turkey hunting experience was private land. You know, because to me, I don't turkey hunt, but I do get it. I've turkey hunted, and I get, you know, the relationship. And that if anything allures me to turkey hunting, it's the relationship between the hunter and that bird, that gobbler that you hear. But how do you do it? How do you really go in there and develop a relationship with that guy and start figuring him out and understanding him when person or persons unknown, be it a trespasser on private land, I guess, or public land hunters are interfering and running interference and messing with that bird when you're not there. And I've always been envious of people that have at their disposal private land with turkeys on it, that they get to know those turkeys year round. You know, even during the off season, you're out there in the fall, you see those turkeys out there feeding in the pasture, the hens, or you're walking along and the poults, you know, and you begin to just kind of understand those turkeys and their relationship to that land base. So you get kind of begin to understand that land base and where to be and where to go and how to do it. And now it's just a tango dance between you and that bird until the stars line up and you close the deal. And that's something, I guess if I could get up every morning and walk out or drive out to somewhere behind a locked gate, hopefully with no trespassers, and just, if nothing else, just sit there and listen and walk through the woods, because as a forester, I've walked through the woods this time of year many a time, and it's just beautiful to watch Mississippi woodlands start to wake up. And it just, this in-between season stuff is really nice. And I think I would really probably enjoy it, or at least entertain the idea of being a turkey hunter more, if I had that opportunity, and I don't. And but see, you know, that's
see if you agree with me on this, Ramsey. Public land turkey hunting is the same as extreme shot chasing and duck hunting. Public land turkey hunting. I mean, because man, it's almost cartoonish. You hear bird gobble, and you got 10 people coming at a bird from every different angle coming at that bird.
Yeah. One of Forrest's little buddies, he's a grown man now. One of Forrest's buddies, I've known him since he's a little boy, was describing the other day having gotten up and gone to an area that he hunts and gotten there well before daylight, just waited. Here's that gobbler off there away down the road, just where he kind of expected it to. And as he's sorting his stuff, he got the whole gate to himself, the whole little parking lot to himself. And about that time, coming in on two tires with bright lights and roared up headers on his motor, here comes a guy whooping in the parking lot, slams on brakes, puts his stuff on, says, "Morning, how you doing?" He said, "Hey, man, I'm here. I've been here for 2 hours." The guy said, "Yeah, well, this is the only place I know, so it looks like we're both hunting it." What do you do? I mean, what do you do? There you go. You know, and that, man, how disappointing that must be. Forrest told me some of the areas he hunts, that he'll hear that bird gobbling on the roost, or maybe fly down and start gobbling. He said, no matter how fast, whatever. He said, if you can hear a car, blacktop or gravel, he says, that bird shuts up. And you don't know if he's standing there scared to death, or if he's walking, just not gobbling. But for, you know, 10, 15, 20, 20, 30 minutes, that bird shuts up. He knows to shut up. I heard a car. And, you know, how do you play chess with that bird when he's adapting to the pressure and not playing by the rules. I can see where Forrest's, it would frustrate me to death. And it would absolutely frustrate me to death. He got, I'll not tell us on Forrest, because he finally figured a bird out, and Bird wasn't quite, you know, he'd moved a little bit from where he'd been the day before, and Forrest got in there close to him and was, the bird was gobbling good. He said it's almost like he was gobbling while he was running. Forrest got down a creek bank, just ran himself, and finally cut that bird off and got in front of him. He said he probably ran a mile. Finally got in front of that bird. That bird was just coming through the woods, gobbling. He popped up, got set up about 100 yards away from him. Boom, shot goes off, killed his turkey. Had no idea that guy was even in the world. That's public land hunting at its best. You know, and I mean, I think a man, but, you know, and I'll say this, Rocky, I grew up hunting public duck woods. I mean, that's where I cut my teeth, was on public. And I don't think it was the madhouse then, we're talking nearly 20 years ago, that it is now. We're talking over 20 years ago. I don't think it was the madhouse then that it is now, but it was competitive, and I ain't got a competitive bone in my body, really. My biggest competition has always been myself, you know, pushing myself to go faster or do more or whatever, you know, that's what been my motivator in life. But until I started duck hunting public land, and that, you know, all things equal, you either win or you lose. You either get on the board or you don't. Somebody's got to kill the most ducks out there to limit that day. And not everybody is. And it made me, I always felt like it made me a better hunter. I felt like it made me a more aggressive caller or a less aggressive caller. I think it made me strategize how to where and how to hunt those birds. All things equal, you know, so, but turkey hunt, wow. I mean, at least when I'm out there on a public land duck hunt, places I hunt, the breaks, places like that, I kind of sort of knew where everybody was. I guess if I'm in the woods, I hear them calling. I know where they are, and they're mobile, and they're not, you know, they may be downwind of me. They may be doing something unscrupulous, but they're not within 30 yards with a loaded shotgun pointing my way. And that's a
right.
Scary thing to me, too, about hunting turkey land is, you know, nobody's wearing blaze orange. Nobody's making noise. They're all a little Hiawatha Indians hiding from a turkey, you know. And but you just got to assume that they know you're that you walking through the woods doing something, you know, that they don't get. You got to just assume that they know hunter safety and don't mistake you for a turkey or something along them lines. And, you know, countless of the people have been shot turkey hunting, and I just choose not to do it on public land. God bless you if you do, because you're to me a public land turkey hunter, a successful public land turkey hunter is probably the most badass of badass woodsmen, in my opinion. But, Arky, you or somebody telling me one time about the hot streaking of it all, you know.
That's what I was just going to say to you. Well, I was going to say this. I think that the thing that I found about turkey hunting is there's a lot of people, not a lot, there's a small fraction of turkey hunters that stay on hot streaks. But the thing that I think about those people is they're the most patient. They will sit there and wait a bird out. You know, a lot of times, I'll be the first to admit, you got a bird gobbling, and every call you make, what's the first thought that comes to your mind? Oh, man, I'm gonna, you know, he's 100, 150 yards away. Oh, I'm going to get a little closer. We'll get on just a little closer. Well, if he's gobbling, the thing about it is, if he's gobbling to your call, at some point before he gets back on a roost, he's going to come check that spot out. All you got to do is be patient. Mm-hmm. That's it. But we as humans are so impatient in everything. In every turkey I've ever killed, except maybe three or four that were killed as soon as they flew out of the tree, right in front of my gun barrel, all the rest of them, the other 30 or 40, they were waited out. You just got to sit there. I know that it gets boring, and that's a lot of time. That's why duck hunters don't make good turkey hunters, because it's a lot of sitting and waiting it out. Deer hunters usually make better turkey hunters.
Well, given this last season, the way I hunt, how I hunt, you better have persistence, you know, and stick it out. And I've always been that guy. Like, we talked about this before, too. You know, okay, I'm hunting here, I'm in Mississippi or wherever I'm in, and the ducks aren't in, or the ducks aren't flying, they aren't doing this, but, you know.
I take that back,
Ramsey. That next duck. Some duck hunters. I get what you're saying. Some duck hunters.
Some.
It's funny you say that. I wrote for us the other day, and I literally said, persistence pays. Be persistent. You know, but now let's take it to a whole other level, Rocky. I know you love your Zig Ziglar moments about life and business, but the same could be said about anything, about building a brand, about building a business, about building a career, about climbing the ladder, about finishing school, about taking organic chemistry and getting a C instead of an F. I mean, persistence. Man, you know, being a baseball player, you know, you talk about hot streaks, boy. We come into college baseball, and I'll be honest with you, I don't watch sports after college level. I love the streakiness of college baseball and high school and little league baseball. I love that because it's pure emotion. A lot of it, I mean, I know their skill set. Don't get me wrong. I know there's an immense skill set involved with college baseball. But you ever notice a guy, you ever notice somebody just kind of meeking along and ain't doing their best, and buddy, it gets into tournament, pop, 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 and all of a sudden them bats get hot, and it carries them all the way to Oklahoma. You know what I'm saying? To Omaha. I mean, it's just but again, persistence. They kept persistent at what they were doing until it all hooked up. And you know, I've always said, shooting bands, for example, is lucky. Shooting bands is just luck of the universe, but it ain't. It's purely statistical. You know what I'm saying? It's just I can remember a camp I was in over in Arkansas, kept meticulous records of ducks killed per blind, mallards killed per blind, and aggregate. They just really, on a very simple format, kept it up. And let me tell you what, about 200 mallards being killed, there was a band coming. Period. End of discussion. And when you got done at the end of the season most years, you could divide number of mallards by number of bands, and it worked out to about 200. I mean, it was purely statistical. Well, you know, the more mallards, the more Canada geese, the more blue-winged teal, the more wood ducks, more ducks that a man shoots, the more bands you're going to get, quote, lucky and kill. That's my professional opinion, and it just takes persistence. You know, it just takes sticking the course. And
I shouldn't have lumped all duck hunters in there, though, because they're some of the most successful duck hunters are the guy. You know what? They waited out 12 o'clock. They don't.
Yes,
they don't look at their watch at 8:30 and say, "Oh man, nothing's flying. I gotta go. I gotta cut. I gotta rake leaves." Usually, the guy that stays after 8:30 when they don't fly is the guy that kills them.
We got a member in our camp we all laugh and kid about. He's one of my favorite members, honestly. But the whole big joke is you always hear his four-wheeler first. He don't drive – nobody drives a four-wheeler no more. They all drive these Rangers and things. But boom. And then the whole big thing is about 8:30, I smell bacon, he says. And him and his boys load up and go. And our property, in average normal good years, it seemed to me that, you liable to shoot mallards daybreak, but really and truly, they start kind of coming in later. You know, wherever they are, feeding and whatever they're doing, you know, a lot of flooded timber, a lot of different habitats you hunt. Birds really aren't feeding; they're coming in to lay up and do their thing. And so that mid morning flight, people that got to go and smell bacon and do this and do that. You know, I don't mind sticking it out. Besides that, what else have I got better to do than sit there and visit with the people I choose to hunt with? I love it. You know, some of my most memorable duck hunts have been sticking it out. And I say all the time, my favorite duck's the next one. Well, you really don't know what the next duck is. Could be your first band. It could be a different species. Maybe a hybrid. I never killed one, but by God, I'm sticking it out, waiting on one. you know, and so, you know.
especially in Mississippi, though, what you just said, Ramsey, especially in Mississippi. A lot of people shoot those early flight gadwalls. Oh, it's over. Let's go. But they miss those two packs of the pair of mallards that come in every 15 minutes, starting at about 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock.
That's exactly right. And, you know, on one hand, I do like the spectacle of seeing a bunch of mallards. But from a hunt standpoint, I really like fooling with single to four packs. That you know, more workable numbers of birds. It to me, it's just a little more intimate, a little more one-on-one. And it may not be a mallard necessarily, but I do like to fool with them. It could be something else. And you know, some of the places out west, I find where there's a lot of mallards, clients start getting a little anxious, ready to roll around late breakfast time, you know, 11 o'clock. But even there, last year especially, our productive hunting was later. Hunting out in Wyoming, Wild Brassica Outfitters last year, a lot of Canada geese were coming off, and it was warm. It wasn't, you want snow, you want cold, you want frozen, were coming to these feed areas. But a lot of those birds were coming over, and we seduced a few of them into the decoys as they were flying over us going somewhere to feed out towards Fort Laramie. And when they started coming back, 10:30, 11, that's when we capitalized on limits. But you know, during the interim, we just sat there and fooled around and talked and visited, and, you know, but we were persistent. And hunting in Nebraska last year, you know, the week before we were there, it was really nice weather. Hunting out there in western Nebraska with Ryan Livingston, and wow, I mean, those guys just lit the mallards up. Lit them up. Well, we were there, it was warmer, so we had to wait them out. And what else did we have to do but wait out mallards till 1 o'clock? Who cared? I mean, we had enough mallards coming in singles and pairs. We literally took turns, and it took till 1 o'clock to get them. Big deal. What else did we have to do? We were duck hunting. You know, it was beautiful. But you know, turkey hunting, deer, you know, deer hunting, man, countless are the guys that find that old buck. You know, I'm not this kind of deer hunter, people. I mean, I go out and I deer hunt, and I just take what the universe throws out in front of the scope. I mean, that's just me. I'm not even a trophy hunter, Rocky. I could really care less about how big his antlers are. You know what turns me on is an old deer. I want an old deer normally. I think that's a lot better than a big deer. I want an old deer. But I just take what the universe comes. But man, I know these guys that get out and lay in with a buck. Maybe they followed it. I mean, I know guys that put out cameras like breadcrumbs through the woods and can just follow this deer and know where to know. They begin to know and pattern what this deer is doing. Well, still, the stars have to line up for them to get out there and kill him. And you know, maybe they get a close shot at him at year four. They say, he just ain't quite big enough. And they let him go to come back. And I think, you know, that relation with that animal, I like that. I like that. That's kind of interesting to me that people can develop that relationship, so to speak, with that animal, and then really hunt that animal. And to me, that's a lot of what turkey hunting is, don't you think? I mean, to me, from outsider looking in as a non-turkey hunter, that's how I get it. And maybe that's why I'm really not a big turkey hunter, because I don't have anywhere. You know, it's not like you go look up in the newspaper, somebody leasing great turkey land. That doesn't exist. You know, maybe you look and find some or something like that, but really it does. And so I do. I get that part of turkey hunting, that relationship part with it. That's to me what's so cool about it. And I hear these guys, I saw a post, I don't remember what it was about. I don't even remember what somewhere on Duck South, you know, somebody posted up. Yeah, well, I didn't say nothing about, you know, this past duck season, but I hunt hard, and I hunt wide, and I hunt good, and I'm better than all you son of a guns, and killer's gonna kill. I'm a duck killer, and I went out and killed a bunch of duck this year. Great. Let me give you a pat on the back, mister. Come on, Rocky. I mean, who the heck did that this year? You know, and again, different folks, different strokes, but you know, I cut a pretty wide path traveling and doing things work related and experience related. I'm on Mississippi. I don't want to hunt 50 different places. I'm in it for a little bit more than just raw duck numbers. I don't even keep up with how many ducks we kill. I can't tell you how many ducks Team Russell killed last year or the year before or in my life. To me, numbers cheapen it. You know, I'm there for a different reason. Heck yeah, I want to shoot ducks. I'm there for a little bit different reason. I guess what I'm getting at is great. People go out and scout and they do this and do that. But I submit to you, as a former public land hunter, and I was a public land hunter and loved public lands. It made me a better duck hunter, made me hunt harder. It kind of brought out my competitive best being a public hunter. And as I started having children, a lot of public hunting I was doing was dangerous. It was dangerous. It's probably the most dangerous place on God's earth to duck hunt. And as I started having kids, Boris was born in 97. I didn't want that no more. I didn't want to go out to public land at 4 a.m. and try to teach a child who was handicapped with skill set anyway on shooting. I didn't want to over limit him and put him into somewhere where instead of learning the fundamentals of just duck hunting, he had to compete with 50 other people hidden behind cypress trees. High ball, and hunt hard, and be rude if you had to be rude and do things. I didn't want that. So that's when I started looking at a club solution, you know, a little bit different opportunity. And for that was just my choice. So, but I still submit to you that I believe, if you work harder and dig deeper, you kill more ducks than if you don't. But I still think there's a whole lot of luck involved into it. I think that to shoot ducks last year anywhere in the continental United States of America, let alone the very deep South, but I think you had a little bit of luck. You got a little streaky there. I think you had a little luck going for you too. That's just my humble opinion. I'm not saying you didn't work hard, you didn't shoot well, you didn't obey the fundamentals and work harder maybe than your contemporaries. But I think you had some luck going for you too, because there wasn't just a ton of ducks, you know. And that's just my thoughts on the subject, Rocky.
Well, I'll say this. You know what I've always compared public hunting to, whether it be turkey, deer, or duck. I've always compared it to the poker table at the casino. You've got the guys that watch Texas Hold'em on the ESPN 2 or 3 times. Man, I can do this. Let's roll. And you got the guys that have done it for a while. They're pretty good. They could go either way. They may play a wild hand. They may play ace king. Can't ever tell. Then you got the old guys. Man, they work the odds. They work the percentages. They've got numbers rolling through their head. They win 80-90% of the time. And that's what it's like in the woods. The most successful ones are the most patient and persistent, and they put the odds of in their favor going into that hand, whether it be scouting or, you know, they put all these things. They don't just ride through the boat, ride through the public land, shot chasing, gobble chasing. They've scouted, they've done their homework, they know their everything. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. They know when to hold, they know when to fold.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's a good way of putting it. And, you know, that's a dang good way of putting it. Hey, I got thinking about this hunting private land a little while ago, and it made me think of a friend of mine, Ed Stell from Georgia. And I met Ed 3 or 4 years ago, and I won't make it this year because of a conflict in schedule, but every year I go and hunt with him and another good friend of mine over there in the Atlanta area, a good client of mine, that we've become very, very good friends. He'd come to Mississippi and duck hunt, and I've gone over there and turkey hunt and done there, and we see each other 3 or 4 times a year around the world. But I met Ed and over there turkey hunting one time, and Ed's a turkey hunter now. And it don't help that he's about 6.5 foot tall, big old long leg. You know, me keeping up with him pretty tough. That man's got a stride on him. We go turkey hunting. But he's that real serious turkey hunter. He knows turkeys. But the first time we ever hunted with him, just kind of telling a story on myself. First time I ever turkey hunted with him, we got off in the woods. We got down there, you know, there's a little bottom out through there in the woods. He said, yeah, these turkeys are over there on the other thing. I think I can get them to gobble. And he put a few decoys out. You know, you sit here and I'm going to sit here. And we didn't know anybody from Adam. We just met that night. Boom. Next morning, we're turkey hunting together. And whatever he did, called or hooted or whatever he did, pop, 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 both them gobblers just light off. Right off the bat. They hit the ground. Gobble, 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 gobble. You know, and I don't ever see them. Boy, I'm thinking they're coming right in. I got my gun up, man. I'm pointing towards the decoys.
We'll have to work on your sound effects before next week.
All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, that's what it sounds like to deaf duck hunting ears. You know, anyway, these turkeys are goblins. You ought to hear me imitate thunder. But anyway, they shut up or they got quiet or they did what they're going to do, and I got bored. I mean, you know, I'm sitting there in my little vest, and sitting there. He's off behind me. He ain't making sounds no more. You know, and I'm just sitting there, and I don't know, 30 minutes later, something catches my eye. I look to my right. To the right. There's two gobblers coming down, not from in front of us, but from behind us. I'm like, Ed, he don't do nothing. Ed. I'm like, man, this guy's as deaf as I am. He don't see them turkeys well. Look at them out there about 60, 70 yards, you know, and I pivot around a little bit. They step behind a tree. They step back out. Boom, my sheep. And I lost sight of them because they just went behind a big old tree. Man, Ed looks like a tall man anyway. But when he jumped up as quick as he did and was sitting over me yelling, I mean hollering and scolding me, for those turkeys I didn't think he saw. He looked 10 foot tall. I stood up and said, man, relax. I got him. He's right there behind that tree. He goes, there ain't no way. I said, Ed, that turkey's dead as a wedge, I guarantee you. That turkey was, what, 60, 70 yards? I killed that turkey. He's right behind that tree right there. You just can't see him. He relaxed. And we walked over there, and Rocky, there wasn't a feather. There wasn't nothing. That, you know,
oh,
God, missed. We went and shot that choke I had all this faith in and put it on paper. I'd shot that choke. I can't even remember where I got that. I'd shot that choke for 10 years. And I'd killed turkeys that far. And I had shot geese a mile high and all that mess with it. We went and put it on paper that afternoon. And I think 3 BBs hit the paper or hit the box the paper was on at that far. So, you know. Boy, was I embarrassed.
Out of left field, let me ask you something. What size shot was it?
Probably fives, probably heavy shot fives. Duck fives, if that. I mean, you think I went and bought turkey loads, and I went and bought duck fives. Now, since then, you know, my son, Forrest, who is into all this stuff, you know, has got me rigged up with a choke and a clip-on sights that are amazingly accurate and throw a great pattern at that distance. And some kind of gee-whiz ammo that somebody makes 3.5 inch. And I never shoot a 3.5. If I shoot a 3.5 inch shell, it's once or twice a year at a turkey. And I hadn't done it this year and ain't going to. But you know, like out there in Texas with Dakota Stower at that time, I smoked that turkey out there about 60 yards. I mean, in fact, there was 3 of them. And I was thinking to myself, I'm fixing to tag out right here in one trigger pull. And I aimed at the middle one and pulled the trigger, and it looked like a sledgehammer hit him in the head, like a carpet beetle on an anvil. He folded so quick, and the other two just left unscathed. It threw a pattern about like a snuff can. So I'm impressed with that. I wish I'd had that. You know, Ed wouldn't have nothing to hate on me about every time I see him. Cause don't think my buddy Ed don't remind me. And if he doesn't, his buddy does. My Georgia buddy does. That story comes up every single time I go to Georgia. Maybe they'll forget about it next year. But yeah,
I'll tell you this. I got, and the reason I ask you that from that story was, I was given a jelly head choke years ago when they first were really, really popular. And anyway, I shot it, and I could never get the pattern right. Kind of the same scenario that you just played out. You know, 4 or 5 pellets at 30 yards in a one by one sheet of paper. What in the world? I called Will and said, Will, what is the deal with these chokes? And the first question out of his mouth was, what size shot are you using? I said, I think they're either 4s or 5s. He said, for some reason, in some guns, these jelly heads will not shoot a 4 or 5.
Oh.
Yeah, they would not shoot a 4 or 5. They just would send them scattering everywhere. But you put a 5, 6, or 7 in it, and it was just tight like a slug. And so I found that interesting that day. He said, man, what are you doing? I'll never forget this part of this conversation. He said, what are you doing shooting 3.5? And let me tell you something. If y'all ever run into Will at a show and he asks you why you shoot 3.5 inch, don't tell him because they don't make 4 inch. He doesn't like that joke. He is a firm believer in getting them into 20 yards, 15, 20 yards, and killing them that way. He is a firm believer in not reaching out and touching one. Don't make the joke about 4 inch.
It goes back kind of that intimate relationship with that animal, doesn't it? You know, I get it now. You know, people are hunting me, and I hunt all over the world, and we pass shooting different things like that at ducks. You know, so I'm not that guy. I want that duck to be over the decoys, but I'm not gonna. It's not gonna make or break my hunt. If he gets within range, I'm gonna pull the trigger. And most people I hunt with know it or do it themselves. And I don't mean, you know, 80 yards. I'm talking about just within respectable range. But I mean, there is a lot to be said. Hunting with a shotgun, be it turkeys or ducks, and getting that animal within that threshold of ownership. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said. That really kind of is the sport. I was working on a post when you called Food for Thought. You know, and I'll admit it, Rocky, I don't hunt for food. I am not a meat hunter. And I don't think anybody is. I really don't think it's just day and age. A very, very small percentage. Now, Rocky, I mean, tons of waterfowl and wildfowl and game birds, game animals, and venison and pork cross my plate into my stomach during the course of a year. And I try everything. Some of the foods I've eaten over the course of my life, I'm that guy. I'll try anything. And I do think that one of the greatest tributes to the hunt, the hunter, and the hunted is properly cooked game. But I don't hunt for meat. I don't hunt for meat. I hunt for that relationship with that animal, that connection to that animal and to the habitat and to the people. It's like that's just kind of mine. I think we all do. At the end of the day, I hunt because it's fun. I enjoy it. I don't hunt to eat. I don't hunt for meat, and I don't think my granddad did either. Man, that man. Let me tell you, he hole picked doves and ducks, and you know he was that guy. He utilized every bit of what he killed, but he didn't hunt for meat either. He hunted because he enjoyed being the camp cook. He enjoyed that sign above the door that said Russell's Kitchen, cookie no cleaning. You know he enjoyed playing cards with the boys and going out in the duck blinds and calling and. They didn't limit every day. You know what I'm saying? They just had a good time. And when they shot duck, he, by God, plucked them all and cooked them. And at the time, I remember everybody liked his stew. That was what he did with all his game. And it really wasn't a gumbo. Now it was a stew. But that's how he cooked a lot of his stuff. And but he did not hunt to eat. And, you know as a duck hunter, that bird is 10, 15 yards, back paddling over decoys, boom, you own him. And I can see where Will's coming from with that turkey. Just the stars lined up, you played the game, both people on stage did what they're supposed to do, boom, it's right there. There's a lot to be said for that. I think there's a whole lot to be said for that.
Ramsey, you work with federal lands there for a little while in your career.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you this question.
I did.
You know what the thing that I've learned about with when it comes to deer hunting or sometimes turkey hunting and sometimes duck hunting? The people that want to always run to the middle aren't always the most successful. And what I mean by that, some of the people that have killed some of the biggest deer on the refuge system in the United States are the people that let the wild Indian run to the middle, and the guy that sets up on the outside kills the biggest deer.
Mm-hmm.
100 yards from the truck.
They'd find, you know, those guys that I knew where those funnels were, that those deer were coming through. And so they would just, by God, persistently stick with where they knew those deer were going to come through that funnel. That natural, just filter through that little funnel. And the more pressure you had running around the woods, the more water was coming through that funnel. The more game was just coming through that funnel. They were being pushed just by being stirred up. You're right about that. And it wasn't always most remote locations. You know, it was
two of the biggest bow kills I know
the funnel.
Were literally 100-150 yards away from the truck on refuge in Mississippi. Hey,
yep.
Look, before I let you go, I don't know if I saw this just a minute ago. I'm sure it's not April Fool's, because he commented and said that it is real. But Brad Albeck made a post on Duck South, said that the Central Flyway is proposing going up to a 3 mallard hen limit this year.
What now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that not nuts?
That's surprisingly. I haven't seen that, Rocky.
Still five mallards, but 3 hens is a possibility.
I just can't imagine that.
Two people have asked him, said, is this a joke? I mean, is you a couple of days late on your April Fool's? And he said, no, this is sad to say, but it's not a joke at all. I said, you know, my thing is with the uncertainty and waterfowling right now, this probably isn't the best year to go to 3 hens. Maybe after we figure a couple of things out in the next couple of years, yeah, maybe. But right now, man.
I don't like it. You know, I'm not a mallard purist. I'm not a greenhead purist. But as you evolve as a duck hunter, at some point in time, every duck hunter's life that I know, it becomes less about the numbers, which is what 3 hens would do, and more about just what we just talked about, that turkey and that duck. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with shooting hen mallards, but you got to admit, greenheads look better than hens in a picture. Why would you do that? I have no idea. I've not seen that science, and I feel like I'm pretty on top of it all. I've not seen that proposal, heard that, but anybody opposed to it needs to email somebody and complain about it. Tell them to maybe opposed to it. Let your voice be heard. Exercise your freedom of speech and write emails and to congressmen and to flyway leaders and let them know that that's an asinine idea. You know,
yeah.
And to sit by and do nothing is to just say you go along with it. But I just don't. I can't believe that.
You got a lot of hunters on the edge after last season, and
yeah.
Maybe it's because. You know, the sport itself is ruled by mostly young hunters. Most of them, like you've talked about in this podcast before, have not seen low limits, limited number of days that you can hunt. All they've ever known is 60 days. And so when you have a bad season, you get, let's just say it, a little bit over emotional. But the guys that have been in it a long time know that you have bad seasons. Hey, let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah. No, that I agree with that, man. I mean, and I'll tell you this, since we talked about doom and gloom, productivity because of the drought or dry or heat, seems to have been a lot of rain and a lot of snowpack. And I'm encouraged again. you know, duck hunters are eternal optimists. A lot of us are. And I'm encouraged. I'm very encouraged by the amount of water up in the Dakotas and the amount of winter precipitation that's accumulated up in Canada. So it could be productivity. And I thought Delta waterfowl, in light of in response to a group out of Louisiana that shall remain unnamed, because I don't think they deserve mentioning. But in response to that, boy, Delta waterfowl and Duck Unlimited had really come out swinging with the science and with some very good explanations about the duck migration last year. And I thought Delta waterfowl, I wish I could remember that biologist's name, very articulate, and boy, had his data lined up. Brought in a lot of factors in the first two parts that I saw, a three-part series of why ducks didn't make it south last year. He talked about the weather. He talked about the migration. But one thing he brought up that Rocky, I never really thought about, was he brought up the productivity last year and with the science, with the numbers, especially of species that generally fly deep south, regardless of weather. He talked about, you know, their less than stellar productivity. So, you know, more ducks is better. So let's fingers crossed. Let's hope we get a lot of duck productivity next year. And let's hope we do get some wintertime.
We said it was going to take a miracle. We said many times it was going to take a miracle this spring. And good Lord, if March wasn't the miracle for that duck hunt needed, whew. I mean, it was
some of the reports I've heard is a lot of the Dakotas, a lot of the prairie, a lot of Iowa, you know, all this little corn up north theory is all shot to the devil and back next year, because there's a lot of farmers that are not going to get their crops in, especially corn, due to the amount of flood water that's up there. It's been coming through that part of the world in the upper Mississippi River Basin. So let's just scratch that theory right here and out. There ain't going to be corn to do a lot of that with for a lot of folks. Oh, there might be some, but it ain't going to be near the corn on the landscape in the upper Mississippi flyway that there has been in the past, because they're still ravaged with water right now.
Ramsey, crazy black helicopter deal. You know, Foles talked about it in that first podcast that he was on, that he was against the – all these people had all this corn, all these ducks sitting on it. You know, these ducks sitting on these most of the time when you – I've seen in this area, people plant corn and flood it and leave it for sanctuary. Number one, for ducks to feed on, but more importantly, you know, for shelter. Ducks feel safe. It's almost like going back to the coffee weeds. But, you know, as we sit here and we see all these ducks sitting on all these sanctuaries, and we say, oh, this corn's a magnet, man. It's drawing these ducks in. It's drawing them in. How much of that is related to pressure?
Yeah.
Because as long as I can remember, the reason ducks go nocturnal and go out and feed at night, it's because of pressure being applied to them. And the reason they go back to these sanctuaries where the corn is because of the pressure during the daytime.
Yeah, Rocky. You know, as we talked a few podcasts ago about that, about this subject of ducks and duck numbers and hunting pressure and stuff like that, I was literally sitting in a parking lot waiting on my dear wife to run in and get some groceries and stuff one day. And just off the top of my head, I was thinking about this subject, and just off the top of my head, and I'm no biologist. I'm not Delta waterfowl. I'm not Ducks Unlimited in terms of their biology. They've got some rocket scientists working for them, and the numbers don't lie, in my opinion. I'm just telling you, their science don't lie. The numbers don't lie. I think they're very, very smart people. But you know, we talked about I described like a matrix, a myriad of different reasons why things change. Well, first off, things just change. You know, the universe is dynamic. You know, the earth is dynamic, climate is dynamic. You know, and I throw this out there, for just consider to yourself that millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed Mongolia, and big T-Rex heads are found where it's presently minus 50 during the winter time. And you know what? Dinosaurs didn't live in minus 50. They never have, never will. Okay, so that's why they ain't there no more. It's because weather changed geologically. I got to think about this. You talk about hunt pressure, for example. I just made some notes to myself. You know, just in a little note thing. So I could, and I'll add to it as I think of things one day. It's just how I do. But talking about hunting pressure, you know, on the one hand, the data don't lie. There's fewer hunters overall than there was, say, back in the 1970s. But there's a lot less acreage than there was to hunt back during the 1970s. So we got more people on fewer acres. You know, we are 20 years into a liberal framework of adaptive harvest management. I'm gonna go on a limb and say, okay, the numbers don't lie. I'm trusting, fingers crossed, hope to God that they're right. Intuitively, I don't believe it, but I'm gonna leave it to the guys that know the numbers. But we've also got extended seasons. Okay, my dad, who was not a big duck hunter as an adult at all. I can remember 20 something years ago, we'd been out on the river and just smacked them out. We were lit into the broke foot. We were hitting broke foot pretty hard, which was just an ephemeral little duck hole we'd found, that just never was again. But we broke the foot on our motor, riding up on Willow Tree to get back in there and take turns shooting out at the greenheads. And it was pretty nice. And, you know, I stopped by to see Dad because Greenville, Mississippi got some lousy colored water. Something about the softness of it all. I think my dad had the best coffee, just old Mr. Coffee. And boy, on a cold day, I stopped by and get coffee. He had the best coffee. And he come out there and looked at those ducks and talked about the river hunt and told be careful everything else. But my dad would always say, and my uncle, who's in his 70s now, say the same thing, that the good old days are now. Man, back in those days, we didn't kill ducks. They had private property. As a matter of fact, my granddaddy built a pond, a camp house, had a camp for a decade. It's on the south end of Washington County. It's now in a federal refuge system, you know, and they shot ducks. But nothing like I conjured them shooting. You know, my dad say, y'all can shoot six ducks, four mallards. He said, we didn't do that. We couldn't do that, girl. We're on a point system. We didn't do that. You know, the good old days are now. You should look at that, what you got. It's unbelievable. But their seasons were sometimes shorter, too. And now just consider with me, you know, when I say a longer season, how many people go out and start hunting in September now? I'm upper flyaway, heck yeah, their seeds kick off. But even down south during till season, Rocky, as recently as 20 years ago, nobody, I would tell you, went out till hunting. Now who doesn't? A lot of people go out blue wing till hunting. And now we're running snow geese all the way up into mid to late May up in Canada. So we're kicking off in August 15th in Dakotas for dark Canada geese, September 1st in the upper flyaway for birds, all the way down the flyaway, all the way back up the flyaway. Now I know that since January, whatever, 26th, 27th, last Sunday of January, we ain't been shooting ducks. But we've been, you know, the snow goose hunters, especially the ditch crawlers and scouters and this and that, have sure been bouncing them a lot. I mean, seriously, Rocky, that's a lot that's changed in, say, since the good old days. Am I right? That's a lot that's changed. You start looking back at Nash Buckingham's day, those gentlemen didn't go out and hunt for 60 days, Rocky. They went out and hunted for 2 weeks. They took off. They took vacation from the bank or from whatever they were doing, and they got on a train, and they went down the Mississippi Delta, and they buckboard wagoned into a swamp, and they hunted for 2 or 3 weeks, and they went back home. That was it.
See, I think a lot of people think that those guys, and you and I talked, when did we talk about that? 2 or 3 weeks ago, a month ago? A lot of people think that those guys hunted, you know, 30 or 40 days of the whole season. No. And they came a couple weeks right in the peak of it.
That brings up a different thing, you know. It's like what's also changed just in my lifetime, just since I was a duck hunter for the last 30-something years, is a change in hunter attitudes. You know, my granddad's quality time, going out and playing cards at his duck camp and shooting some ducks and hole picking them and for my daddy to tell me that we're in the good old days versus then, you know, versus now via marketing, if nothing else. I mean, now hunting is a passion. It's a lifestyle. It is the basis of many people's vanity. But it ain't just a recreation, okay? It ain't just something you go do for a few days a year. For most of us, it's life or death. It's every waking moment. If I can get off of work, if I can get away from the family, if mama will let me quit Christmas shopping, if I can come in late for Christmas dinner, boom, I'm hunting. I'm duck hunting, son. That's a whole lot of change in now versus your granddaddy's day. Let alone, unless your granddad was a market hunter, you know, a few of them were. And with that, Rocky, look at hunter mobility. Ask yourself who goes to Papaw's Back 40 and hunts 60 days a year. Yeah, some do. Nothing wrong with that at all. But when I'm home, I like to hunt. I know just where I want to hunt. It's not everywhere. It's one place. But I'm just saying, you know, it's to me a profound effect is taking place in terms of, we're talking about hunting pressure, where now look at the massive the collective quest for species, the North American 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever you call it, a lot of people, and even if they ain't. They ain't just hunting Mississippi, they hunt Mississippi, Texas, Arkansas, and hey, let's throw in Oklahoma this year, or go to Kansas, or go to Canada. We'll freelance up in Canada for $20. How many people are hunting this duck hunter and that duck hunter and all these hardcore duck hunters are hunting lots of places beside, or if nothing else, they're hunting their lease and five others or 10 others plus public land. I mean, to get those days in and to stay in those duck numbers, Rocky, okay, that's a whole the change, and then look at the technological advances, ammo. Okay, so the change in ammo between my granddaddy shooting Remington Mohawk high brass 6.5 versus 3.5, space age technology will penetrate steel at 95 yards and guaranteed kill a duck at a half mile. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm exaggerating, but I'm saying the mindset of it all, to where not only might people be spending more days in the field or in a blind, but now maybe they're stretching out further than that 15, 20 yards that old granddaddy was shooting with a Remington non-vented rib 1100 and 2.75-inch sixes. Maybe they are. Okay. The camo and gear that we hide better, we're more comfortable, and we stay longer, or we can stay longer. Look at the just the way transportation has changed, Rocky. In terms, I mean, you know, with the advent of mud motors and hyperdrives, and I mean, just the transportation technology in terms of ATVs, you know. My granddad didn't have that, son. They got out and drove a Bronco to the edge of the lot and crawled over the levee and walked to their duck blind. Now people go roaring up in them with ATVs and parts of the marsh and parts of this and parts of that, parts of the world. Where can a duck hide anymore? Unless it's closed off. They can't, buddy. We can drive right up to it. That's pressure. I never forget one time, Rocky, when I was working in
there's a lot of stuff that didn't get you. Like you're saying, a lot of stuff that didn't get used to, that
no,
did not
it's changed.
Get hunted.
It's changed. And you know, I'll tell you this story. Everybody knows that's ever listened to your podcast, knows what I'm talking about, Mr. Pat Pitt. But he's got a absolute do not drive in his fields with an ATV during duck season. How many people do that? How important is that? I mean, come on. Let me tell you a story. I was working for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we had I never really accepted and understood it. Like, man, you know, people, we're going to open this place to hunt, let people come in there and drive and do stuff. Oh, heck no, heck no. And one day, I had to go in and pull some boards on a water control structure on a 640-acre sanctuary in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi. And I couldn't get down this new road in my truck to the gate. So I loaded up a four-wheeler, Kawasaki four-wheeler, which is not the loudest, and it certainly wasn't modified to be loud or fast or anything else. It's a stock, cold-running Kawasaki. And got it off, got it cranked, put it up to the gate. 640 acres in the middle of duck season. I can't remember if I had to add a board or I think I had to take a board down because that dang whole section was nearly wall-to-wall water. But for whatever reason, I had to go to that structure. I got to the gate, had to stop and unlock it. And some ducks right in front of me got up just on the other side of the gate, just inside of property. And I sat there before I could unlock that gate. I watched that entire section with my four-wheeler running. I watched that entire section, 640 acres of Robert, of sanctuary. I watched it void completely of ducks. Lifting off like a domino effect. An entire section of timber and brush and vines and cover and, you know, not just wide open. I'm talking a good habitat, good sanctuary habitat, Tallahatchie County, Mississippi for ducks. That entire thing voided at the sound of that four-wheeler. And we're just talking about putting stress and putting pressure. I'm not talking about bam, 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 killing duck pressure. Rocky, man, we're talking pressure. Who ain't got a four-wheeler? Or a loud boat. Everybody. You know, a lot louder than old Kawasaki four-wheeler 20-something years ago. Guarantee you that. No, that's your, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, technological advances and how hunting pressure and the sources of hunting pressure have changed since Granddaddy's day. I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know. And I've seen these threads. And I don't get on these threads. Everybody's got an opinion, and I respect your opinion. I may not agree with it, probably don't, but I respect it. And you know, this whole madness about changing refuges and change, man, no, do not remove sanctuary from the equation. I'm sorry. But it's full of ducks and your duck hole ain't. My humble opinion, ducks got to have somewhere to go where they ain't getting shot at or disturbed. And to my knowledge, only the state and federal governments are providing it.
You mean you cannot deny?
I'm not
getting into the sanctuary deal with you. I'm talking about you just cannot deny. You want to say corn, but you can't deny everything that Ramsey just
hunting
went
pressure.
Through.
Hunting pressure, man. It's hunting pressure. It's a lot of hunting pressure on these birds now. You know, there's no denying that.
I hate that we have to end it on a discussion that we're not done with, but we're just about out of time. Ramsey, really enjoyed it today. I had to give old Forrest a call. Forrest, you can come up here and hunt with me. And I like that.
You heard that, Forrest. I'll send him a text. He'll probably be knocking on your door about whenever he gets out of school this afternoon. But he's anyway, good luck to everybody out there at turkey hunting. I'm glad I don't.
Well, Forrest didn't, but probably 30 minutes from where I hunt, so I'll be happy to have him. But Ramsey, thank you again. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.